war, politics, social unrest, economic uncertainty, international conflicts, climate change. What is the significance of these current events? Where are we heading? Pastor Gary Webster shares answers from the Bible, giving you hope and certainty in the times ahead.
So glad you've joined us again for Countdown Back to the Future. In this presentation, we're looking at global warnings, today, tomorrow, and you. Some years ago in the United States, a submarine was rammed by a Coast Guard ship and it sunk to the bottom of the ocean. Divers were sent to try to work out a way to get some of the submariners off who were still alive. As the divers were swimming over the hull of the submarine, they felt a tapping sensation. They realized someone was inside the submarine tapping a message in Morse code with a spanner or something, and this was the message that they were tapping out. Is there any hope? Now, that's a mighty good question, isn't it, when you're trapped inside a submarine? But you know, many people today in our world are asking the same question as they look on the outlook of our world. This is the same question. Is there any hope for our world? As they see what is going on many fronts in the world today. You know, Sir Winston Churchill, that great British statesman, Prime Minister during the Second World War, this is what he had to say as he could look out on the world in his day. He said, listen, I'll tell you. He said, I have no hope. I see no hope for the world. Well, thank you, Mr. Churchill. But is there any hope? In this presentation, we're going to see, yes, there is hope. But the prophecies of the Bible, the predictions of the ancients, give us a very realistic picture, but a very hope-filled horizon as well. I want to come with you to answer this question, is there any hope, by beginning in the city of Jerusalem. We want to go back to Jerusalem 2,000 years ago now, back in the times of Herod the Great. Now, Herod the Great built a lot of things in Israel. For example, you can see a model here of the temple that you can see in Jerusalem University today. Herod built this temple to actually curry favor with the Jewish people. He did a lot of other building as well. You will notice here, he built an aqueduct to bring water to the city of Caesarea on your right there. This is the remains of Herod the Great's palace in Caesarea. He named the city after his friend Caesar Augustus. Now, not only that, Herod had a lot of fortresses. You can visit the fortress here on the right there, on the right-hand side, of Masada, an amazing fortress that overlooks the Dead Sea area. And then, of course, on the left, you see the Herodian. This is a fortress that you can visit today just outside Bethlehem, probably the very place where Herod sent soldiers to hunt for the baby in the city of Bethlehem. You've probably heard the Christmas story. Herod tries to kill all the babies in the city of Bethlehem. Probably came from this very place. There's another fortress that Herod had, and that was the one here in Macarius. This is the one where another Herod killed John the Baptist. I'm sure you've heard of John the Baptist. You know, Herod had a lot of fortresses, it seems, because Herod had a lot of enemies. Caesar Augustus once said of Herod the Great, he said, better to be Herod's pig than Herod's kids, because he killed some of his children, killed one of his wives. He was a real butcher of a man, if we could put it that way. But he's the one that built this amazing temple that we see in Jerusalem. Here, by the way, back in Macarius, is one of the columns that you can see where John the Baptist was beheaded here. Herod the Great built this temple. It was to this temple that Jesus of Nazareth came 2,000 years ago. Jesus came here, and as he was in this temple, his disciples, his followers, took him on a little bit of a tiki tour of the temple in Jerusalem. And as they showed him, I want you to notice what he responded as they showed him around this amazing structure, because it was one of the greatest buildings in the ancient world. The Romans themselves had put a lot of money into this temple. He said, Jesus said to them, "Do you not see all these things? Assuredly, I say to you, not one stone shall be left here upon another that shall not be thrown down." Now, the followers of Jesus could hardly believe their ears. They came back after a while up to the Mount of Olives, from where we're taking this picture, overlooking the city of Jerusalem. And here they sat with Jesus and they asked him a very important question. Notice the question they asked him, thinking about what he'd said about what was going to happen to this temple. Tell us, when will these things be? When is this going to happen that the temple will be completely destroyed? I want you to notice, Jesus then proceeds to give them amazing predictions. Predictions concerning Jerusalem itself, concerning the temple of the Jewish people here, and finally concerning the Jewish nation. Three areas of predictions. We're going to have a look at them and see, were these things fulfilled? Remember, these are made 2,000 years ago. Jesus said, first of all, Jerusalem would be surrounded by an embankment. That's like a wall, and it would be completely destroyed, he said. Notice his prediction. Now, this passage we're going to look at, this is from the Mount of Olives, but this is a few days before. He's on his way into the city of Jerusalem on a donkey, and he stops looking over the city of Jerusalem from where the disciples and he are sitting. He said, now, as he drew near, he saw the city and he wept over it. You notice Jesus of Nazareth weeping over this city, saying, days will come upon you when your enemies will build an embankment around you, surround you, and close you in on every side, and level you and your children within you to the ground. A very precise prediction. So he's saying, the temple's going to be totally destroyed. As we saw a moment ago, not one stone here will be left upon another. Now, of course, this almost boggled the minds of the disciples, no doubt, because we can visit the city of Jerusalem. You see this lady here. She's standing in front of this great stone as part of the foundation stone on which the temple was built, sort of like a retaining wall. That bevel edge on that stone, that's typical Herodian stone, stones that Herod's men put in place. Some of these stones in the platform on which the temple was built itself are huge. I've seen stones weigh 20 meters long, 2 meters high, 3 meters wide, massive stones. Now, I'm not suggesting that the whole temple was built of big stones like that, but clearly there were some very large stones. And not one of these would be left upon another, said Jesus. This is why the disciples were, you know, their minds were amazed at such a statement. Number three, Jesus said the Jews were to fall by the sword. Notice the prediction that Jesus made. There will be great distress in the land and wrath against this people. They tragically will fall by the sword. So what a terrible thing was going to happen. The fourth prediction Jesus made was that the Jews would be scattered among the nations of the world. Notice again a very precise prediction 2,000 years ago. Jesus said they will fall by the sword and will be taken as prisoners to all the nations. The fifth prediction that Jesus made was this, the Gentiles, that is the non-Jewish people, he said, would inhabit Jerusalem. Notice his prediction. Jerusalem will be trampled by Gentiles until the times of the Gentiles are fulfilled. Now, question is, five very specific predictions. So were they fulfilled? Because you can see, very precise. Leaving no room for, you know, oh, this could be anything of a fulfillment. No, very precise predictions. Well, let's see what happened. In 66 AD, just 35 years later, Gessius Florus, the commander in charge of Jerusalem, decided to take a temple tax from the Jews. And the Jews said, nothing doing. And they rebelled against Gessius Florus and they massacred the Roman garrison. Now, for the first time for many years, the Jewish people were in control of Jerusalem. Well, the Romans, of course, they weren't going to take that sitting down, were they? So they sent Cestius Gallus, one of their generals, to come and put down this revolt here in Jerusalem. Now, for some strange reason, we're not sure, Even though Cestius Gallus had surrounded the city and was moving in on these people and was about to take the city, for some strange reason, he mysteriously withdrew. He just left the city of Jerusalem, went down the road. The Jewish soldiers inside the city saw them take off and chased after them and had a huge fight down the road. Now, the Christians who were living in Jerusalem at the time, they remembered a warning prediction that Jesus had given some 40 years before, 35 years before. He had said, "When you see Jerusalem surrounded by armies, then you'll know that its desolation is near. Its destruction is about to happen." Now, here's a question. How do you flee a city when it's surrounded? Well, when the Romans withdrew, the Christians realized this is our moment. We need to follow what Jesus said so long ago. So they ran for their lives as the Jewish soldiers pursued the Roman soldiers, and they got out. They fled actually over here to Pella in Jordan today. Now, by the way, the Sydney University has been excavating Pella for many years, but this is where they came. This is where they fled, and they escaped what we're about to see that happened in Jerusalem. Well, the Cestius Gallus was replaced by Vespasian. Vespasian came down and he began to try to put down this revolt. First of all, it seems he attacked the towns and the villages, but let the people escape in one direction, Jerusalem. So pretty soon he had everybody holed up in the city of Jerusalem where he wanted them. But just before he moved in to take Jerusalem, the Emperor Nero died and Vespasian raced back to Rome to become the emperor. As he left, he put his son Titus in charge of the final attack against the Jewish people. So Titus attacks the city of Jerusalem. He besieges the city in 70 AD. What does he do? Titus starved the Jewish people. Now, how did he starve these people inside the city? Well, this is what happened. He built a 5-mile earthen rampart or wall around the city of Jerusalem. What for? To keep people from getting in with aid and to stop people from escaping. What had Jesus said some 35, nearly 40 years now before? They're going to surround this city with a wall. Amazing, isn't it? This book, as we've been seeing, when it makes predictions, you can bet it's going to happen. Well, Josephus, the Jewish historian, he had actually fought against the Romans at first, and then he changed sides and joined the Romans. And he witnessed all that took place, and he wrote it down in his book. And notice what Josephus says. He tells us that 1 million Jews perished in this siege of Jerusalem. Tragic. He describes how the Romans climbed over mounds of corpses to keep the fight going. Shocking. Terrible destruction that took place. Jesus was quite correct. He had warned that they will fall by the sword, tragically. And of course, down through the centuries, tragically, the Jewish people have suffered terribly. I was visiting Auschwitz a couple of times now. It's a somber place to visit. But here, tragically, so many Jewish people perished, over 1 million of them in this one death camp alone, Auschwitz-Birkenau. Well, the Romans began to move in. You notice this building that's surrounded with this red circle here. This is known as the Fortress of Antonia. Now, the Romans built this fortress many years before for one reason. You see, the temple was the centerpiece of Jewish nationalism and Jewish pride. It was the symbol of their nation. And so the Romans knew that if there's ever going to be trouble starting or finishing, it'll be this place. So they built a fortress overlooking it, known as the Fortress of Antonia. They took it from the Jewish people, and then the last place for the resistance was going to take place right here in the temple. And so Titus warned his soldiers. He said, "Listen, this is a magnificent building. I mean, we poured a lot of money into this ourselves. Don't destroy it." But tragically, in the fighting that was taking place, some soldier threw a firebrand into the temple and the whole thing went up in flames. And and it was completely destroyed. Evidently, the Romans, in order to get the gold and the silver that was in the temple, because there was a lot of it in there, it had melted with the intense heat of the fire, and it fell down between the cracks of the rocks. They just tore the temple apart, it seems, to get at the gold and the silver. That's what they were told. And they completely demolished the temple. Not one stone was left upon another. You see this part of the city of Jerusalem here. You can see where the skyline is. This is the level of where you walk today. Archaeologists have excavated down, some 6 meters down, and uncovered the remnants of the fight that took place. You see the massive stones down in the background there. These are from up on top of the Temple Mount, parts of the temple thrown down onto the pavement. In fact, it smashed the pavement, you see in the foreground. And this is what's left. You see those buildings at the side there? These were probably the shops or where the people brought animals or where they exchanged money. Exactly as Jesus said, the temple was completely demolished. And you can visit the Temple Mount today. And it's a mute testimony to what Jesus said. These structures that you see there today, these are Islamic buildings, like this magnificent Muslim monument called the Dome of the Rock. You often see it on television and a few other buildings. But these were put there 700, 800 AD, long while after, flat as a pancake. What did Jesus say as he made those predictions? Not one stone left upon another. And if you ever visit Rome, make sure you go to the Roman Forum, because when you go to the Roman Forum, you can see the Arch of Titus here. The Arch of Titus was the commemorating the great victory the Romans had over this Jewish revolt. When you go to this great structure here, this Arch of Titus, look up underneath and you will see there the Romans carrying away the 7-branched candlestick from the temple. Mute testimony, not only to the historical accuracy of this book, but the prophetic reliability of this book. When God makes predictions, they happen. And so here the archaeologists have brought tremendous evidence for the truthfulness of Jesus' predictions. Now, of course, there's no Jewish temple today. And this has been completely destroyed by the Romans. And today, no temple exists there. But you know, about 60, 70 years later, the Jewish people revolted again. You see, they wanted their independence, and they fought the Romans fiercely for it. Well, this was the time of the Emperor Hadrian. Basically, Hadrian put down the revolt, known as the Bar Kokhba revolt, and he basically said, I've had enough. And he drove the Jewish people out, pretty much out of Palestine. And they became scattered around the world. When you go to the great cities of the world today, you can see that clearly, that the Jews are indeed scattered around the world. For example, you go to New York alone, 2 million Jews living in the great city of New York. They are in Moscow and London and other cities of the world. In fact, there are more Jewish people living outside of Israel than are living in Palestine or Israel itself. Jesus was correct. They will be scattered among the nations. What amazing predictions and fulfillments we see in this incredible book. Now, the Gentiles, the non-Jewish people today, inhabit most of Jerusalem. When you go to Jerusalem, it's fascinating. You will see a section for the Armenians. They're not Jews. You will see a section for the Arabs. Again, they're not Jews. And there's a Christian quarter. They're not Jews. And finally, there's a section, a quarter, for the Jewish people. Most of Jerusalem today is inhabited by the non-Jewish people, just as Jesus predicted so long ago. And of course, the Palestinian Arabs, they control the most sacred piece of Jewish real estate. That's the Temple Mount. Those are the people in control of the Temple Mount, where once the temple stood, as Jesus said, that would be inhabited by the non-Jewish people. So you see, these predictions by Jesus made 2,000 years ago, every one of them precisely filled of the five, about Jerusalem, its temple, and the Jewish nation. You see, this book is very accurate in its predictions. Its fulfillments always take place. Now, What does this mean? Well, it means this. When Jesus was up here on the Mount of Olives, his disciples had not yet finished with their questions. He had only answered part of the question. We've only looked at half the question they asked. Let's look at the statement they made to Jesus way back 2,000 years ago. They said to him, "Tell us, when will these things be?" That is, when the temple going to be destroyed like this and Jewish people scattered and so on? And what will be the sign of your coming and of the end of the world? So you notice, it was a double question. We want to know about what's going to happen to Jerusalem, but what are the signs that the world is coming to an end? Now, Jesus then proceeded to give them some very high octane predictions, if we could put it that way. They almost look like he's plagiarized the Sydney Morning Herald or some newspaper like that. Maybe gotten it straight off television, News Time. That's how amazing his predictions were and how precisely they've been fulfilled. These predictions of Jesus that we're going to look at now show us very clearly that we are on the edge of the end today in our world. Time is running out for our planet. You will notice what Jesus said. He gave a number of areas of signs. The first one was signs in the natural world, signs in the world of nature, things happening in Mother Nature, as we say. Notice, he talked about earthquakes. Here was his prediction. There will be earthquakes in various places. Now, people say, well, we've always had earthquakes, and that's correct. I've been to the Middle East, I've been to places in Turkey where you can see ancient cities which were destroyed by earthquakes. But let me tell you, my friend, there are more earthquakes and they're getting stronger as time goes on. Let me share with you some amazing statistics. For example, earthquakes are on the increase in number. First of all, you will notice the first 10 years of the last century, the 20th century, there were 18 recorded quakes that were over 6 on the Richter scale. Now have a look at this. The last 10 years of the last century, the 20th century, there were 42 quakes over 6 on the Richter scale. And now what about the first 10 years of this century, the 21st century? There have been 217 quakes over 7 on the Richter scale. They're not only getting more numerous, you can see, but they're getting more powerful. No question, Jesus got that right. That's what will be things. One of the things that will be indicating we're nearing the end of time. But that wasn't the only thing. He said there'll be famines. Notice his prediction that he made. He said, listen, there will be famines. Did you realize that there are some 25,000 people who die daily from hunger? At least 10,000 of them are children. What a tragedy. Do you realize what that means? One just died. And now another one has just died. And now another. That's a shocking statistic. Because in our countries, we throw food away by the truckload. But many people in this world, they suffer from hunger. In fact, over some 854 million plus people go to bed undernourished every day. In other words, they're not getting enough food for good health. Not only that, Jesus predicted things like tsunamis and cyclones and floods that would be increasing. Notice his very precise prediction. He said, there will be distress of nations with perplexity, the sea and the waves roaring. Well, I guess you can never forget the place where you stood, where you sat on that horrible day when that Southern Asian tsunami rolled over people in Southeast Asia. What was it? Some 200 to 300 million people lost their lives almost in an instant. You know, nations indeed are terrified by such events. I was running a series of meetings similar to this in the island of Rarotonga, the Cook Islands, on one occasion. When you go around the Cook Islands, all around the island, there were signposts pointing to where you needed to flee if the tsunami hit, all the way around. I was running a series, again, similar to this, in the Kiribati, on the equator nearly. You know, they took me to the highest mountain, 3 meters above sea level. I tell you, if a tsunami comes to the Kiribati, they're finished. That's why sometimes they've been talking about taking the people off and bringing them to places like Australia for security, for safety. No question, people are anxious about such terrifying events. Governments are concerned. I was listening on the national radio on one occasion, and they were talking about how they also fear meteorites smashing into the earth, because if they land in the ocean, they will cause humongous tsunamis. So these things are very real in the thinking of people today. Then, of course, Jesus spoke about pestilences, the superbugs, the supergerms. And haven't we had a few of those when you think about it? What have we had? Ebola virus, where tragically people bleed from various parts of their body, from their eyes, their nose and so on, their ears. A real problem in parts of Africa. Then we've had SARS, swine flu, bird flu, foot and mouth disease. Jesus made predictions about these things. Notice what he said. He said, there will be famines and pestilences. That means superbugs, supergerms, and earthquakes in various places. I'm sure while the COVID-19 pandemic was on, you heard about the Spanish flu. What did they say? They say some 500 million people were infected and some 17 at the lowest estimate, or 50 million people, died from that superbug. That's what Jesus was talking about. As we near the end of time, these pestilences, these things will be increasing. And of course, we all went through the pandemic, didn't we? They tell us by the statistics they've recorded, 705 million people infected. But what is it? Some 7 million deaths, according to their statistics. That's a lot of people. That's a big problem. And that's why many nations were concerned about this a few years ago. But not just signs in the natural world. Jesus spoke of signs in the political world, signs in the world of politics and warfare. Notice his very precise prediction. You will hear of wars and rumors of wars. Did you know that there are 30 to 40 wars every year on our planet? And that's been going on for many decades. Most of us don't have a clue where those wars are, but that's what's taking place. In fact, we spend at least, it's estimated, $268 million on war every hour. Wow, we've spent a bunch of money since we started this presentation, almost half that. Amazing how we love each other on this planet, isn't it? Do you know what that represents? That means we spend 80 times more on war than is needed for good water and sanitation. And those are the basic needs of most people today. Good water and sanitation. That would what would bring much better health. But we spend 80 times more on war. In fact, you know, we have 13,000, nearly probably 500 nuclear bombs in stock today by this time. That's enough to do us all in a few times, isn't it? But that's our world today. Jesus got it right. There will be these problems. Not only that, but problems on an international, global scale, international conflicts. Notice what he said. For nation will rise against nation and kingdom against kingdom. I want you to look at the way John put it in the book of Revelation. And we're going to be going to the book of Revelation in a lot more detail in this series, because this is where we find a lot of the predictions dealing with the very things that are happening today and soon to happen. And God has given these to us so that we can know what's going to take place, so we can be prepared, you see. Notice what the book of Revelation in the center says. The nations were angry. Do you know last century was supposed to be the century of peace in our world? Toward the end of the 1800s, people were saying, wow, humans are so clever. I mean, we're in the Industrial Revolution age. We're getting smart. War will be no more. We'll be able to control it. Then we had the 20th century. Do you know what? 180 million people killed from war alone that last century. It was the worst century in history for warfare and loss of life. And today, of course, politicians and people in control of our planet, they fear nuclear conflict, right? And well, we might, because this can completely upend our civilization. No question about it. Jesus got these things right. Then Jesus spoke of signs in the social world. In other words, the world of human interactions. I want you to notice what Jesus said. Way back then, 2,000 years ago, Jesus said, "Because lawlessness will abound, the love of many will grow cold." Wow. That's a good picture of our world today, isn't it? As lawlessness increases, we see love, genuine love for each other, is going down the gurgler, as we say. Notice what one of Jesus' friends wrote 2,000 years ago, talking about our day. He even mentions the last days. Notice what Paul said as he wrote to one of his friends. "But know this, that in the last days, perilous," that is, dangerous times, "will come." Why? "For men," that is, people, "will be lovers of themselves, lovers of money, boasters, proud blasphemers, disobedient to their parents, unthankful, unholy, unloving, unforgiving, slanderers, without self-control," he said, "brutal, despisers of good, traitors, headstrong, haughty," or proud, "lovers of pleasure rather than lovers of God." And then finally, he said, "having a form of godliness but denying its power." Did you catch that, my friend? Did you catch that? You would think that Paul had actually plagiarized one of the newspapers. Yet he wrote that 2,000 years ago. And don't we see that today? Think of the violence that is taking place in our world. You know, when I was a kid growing up in Perth in Western Australia, in summertime we'd go sleep outside because it gets hot in Perth. And in the night it's hot. So we'd take our mattresses and our blankets out and sleep under the stars out the backyard. You wouldn't really do that today, especially if you've got any sense, because it can be dangerous. You may not wake up next morning because of what can take place in our cities. You know, it's reported that sometimes some 80-year-old women have to have two or three deadlocks on their doors lest a 11 or 12-year-old rape them. That has happened. That's not love in anybody's language. Now, if you don't think it's getting worse, that we're nearing troublous times, we're nearing the end, have a think about this. Here are the top problems in the schools back in the 1940s. Maybe you weren't there in the 1940s, but some of you probably were. These were the top problems in the schools back then. Number one, talking in class, such a terrible crime, isn't it? Chewing gum in the schoolroom, making a noise out in the classrooms, running in the halls of the school. This is really serious. Cutting in line, you can see. Not only that, not wearing your school uniform. And finally, you know, throwing paper all over the place. They were the top problems back in the 1940s. Now let's wind the clock on some 80 years. Now what are the top problems in schools today? Notice, here they are. Drug use, tragically by school kids. Alcohol abuse. And don't we see that in our own country at the end of every year? The schoolies parties and so on. On top of that, what else do we have? We have pregnancy among school kids. They're only teenagers. Suicide, tragically, oftentimes because of what's happening in the home life. Then, of course, we have rape among students, robbery, and assault. There are some teachers who don't want to go to teach at school because they know it's going to be a difficult, tough time. And finally, what else do we have? We have school shootings. I noticed last year that there were, at one stage, I think it was up to about day 126 of the year, there were more mass shootings in the United States of America than there were days in the year. Something is fundamentally wrong. And yet Jesus could see it and predicted it with pinpoint accuracy. Here's a shocking statistic for Australia. Child abuse. Think about this. We know today that 1 in 6 boys and 1 in 4 girls will be sexually abused before the age of 18. That is not love in anybody's language. How did Paul get it so right? Because you see, the Bible is no ordinary book. God knows the end from the beginning. And the reason he tells us these things is so we might believe in him, that we might know he's in control and we might put our life in his hand. Well, finally, Jesus gave signs in the religious world. Notice what Jesus predicted. He predicted that there would be rise in religious cults as we near the end of time. Notice his prediction in the book of Matthew. For false Christs and false prophets will arise. In other words, psychics who are not the real thing. Oh, they're psychics, but they're not working for God. False prophets, false messiahs. We've had a few of them, haven't we? Do you remember, some of you, the Jim Jones massacre, where some 900 people committed suicide? Well, not a massacre, a suicide. Terrible tragedy. Took poison and so on. What about David Koresh, Waco, remember? 70 people went up in flames. He was a false messiah. We've had other ones like Menachem Schneerson, a Jewish messiah, so he says. Do you know today there are at least 7 claimants to be Christ in our planet? At least 7. Let me show you who some of them are. Here we have number 1. We have a retired Siberian traffic cop, policeman by the name of Vissarion. Then there's a cross-dressing former British spy, David Shaler. He says, I'm the Christ. On top of that, we have a Zambian taxi driver, Jesus of Kitwe. He says, I'm Jesus. And then we have a former waiter, Inro Christi of Brazil. He says, I'm the Messiah. Then there's a former politician in Japan known as Jesus Matayoshi. He says he's the Christ. And then we have Moses Hongwani of South Africa, all claiming to be Christ. In fact, even in our own country, in Australia, we have a couple of, or one guy who says he's Jesus. Who is he? Alan John Miller and Mary Luck claim to be the reincarnations of Jesus Christ and Mary Magdalene. Jesus sure got that prediction right, didn't he? Different places in our world, people claiming to be the Christ. But I want to talk about something that's probably more damaging because it involves many more people today. I want to talk about secularism for a moment. Jesus indicated that as we near the end of time, secularism would be on the rise. Notice his prediction here. Jesus said, when the Son of Man comes, when he comes, when he returns, will he find faith? Will he find belief on the planet? In other words, will people be leaving in God as we near the end of time? Do you know today, my friend, there is a widespread disbelief in God and this book, the Bible. Now, that wasn't always the case, you know. You think about it in one particular area alone. We have the disbelief in the fact that God says he's the creator of the world. 2,000 years ago, a prediction was made. Now, I'm not arguing here for creation versus evolution or whatever. I'm just saying somebody made a prediction 2,000 years ago of what would be taking place toward the end of time. That's all my point. Notice what it says here. Peter, one of the followers of Jesus, 2,000 years ago, he says, knowing this first, that in the last days, in the days at the time of the end, they deliberately forget that by the word of God, the heavens were of old. You see, the Bible says that God spoke and things came into existence. Yet what he's predicting is people will deliberately forget that God did this sort of stuff. Now think for a moment. Up to 300 years ago, most people on our planet believed in some form of a creator God or gods, whether it was Hindus, Muslims, whatever it was, Christians around the world. But today, that's different. Most people in the Western world, many of them, do not believe in a creator God. We just came into being by the product of time and chance. So we have Darwinian evolution. And all my point is, somebody 2,000 years ago could see way down to our time, at a time when many people in the Western world do not believe in a creator God. Yet for centuries, everybody did. How did they know that? How did Peter know that? Well, as we said, this book is no ordinary book and God is no ordinary being. So there we have the signs. They're all in. Global warnings in the natural world, global warnings in the political world, global warnings in the social world, and finally in the religious world. Now, what does Jesus say? Notice what he said when he began to come to the end of his discourse on that Mount of Olives. He said these words, "When you see all these things, these signs taking place, know that it is near, even at the doors." What is near? Well, what he was talking about. What was the question? Tell us, what will be the sign of your coming and of the end of the world? That's what he was talking about. In other words, down in the end of time. Time is running out. Which brings us back to that amazing prediction we were looking at in our last presentation, The Last Empire. You remember Daniel was talking to King Nebuchadnezzar of Babylon and talking about the rise and fall of empires from Babylon through to Medo-Persia to Greece to Rome and through to the collapse of the Roman Empire into what we call Western Europe. And then he saw the stone that struck the image on the feet. I want you to notice what he said. Notice what it said. "In the days of these kings, the God of heaven will set up a kingdom which will never be destroyed, and the kingdom shall not be left to other people. It shall break in pieces and consume all these kingdoms, and it shall stand forever." The days of these kings, what does he mean? The divided Roman Empire, where we have the nations of Western Europe. Down in our time, in other words. That's when the stone is going to hit the image on the feet. And what does that stone represent? This represents Christ's return and the end of the world as we know it. God is going to make a new world. This is the last empire. And John in the book of Revelation gives us a little window onto the future. But before we go there, notice he refers back to the second chapter of the book of Daniel. Right in the middle of his book, he says, "The kingdoms of this world, of this planet, have become the kingdoms of our Lord and of his Christ, and he will reign forever and ever." In other words, he's saying we're down in the feet of iron and clay when God's kingdom will take over. And John gives us a little window on the last empire before he finishes his book. Notice what he says the last empire is going to be like. John saw, "God will wipe away every tear from their eyes. There shall be no more death, no more sorrow, no crying. There shall be no more pain, for the former things are passed away." Then he who sat on the throne said, "Behold, I make all things new." Did you get it, my friend? No more tears, no more grieving. Oh, we've seen too many tears on our planet. I'm in a hotel room one day in Sydney. 1 o'clock in the morning, I'm wakened by a lady sobbing next door. Why is she sobbing her heart out? Because her husband or her partner is in bed with someone else and she's on the telephone, evidently trying to talk to him about this. But sobbing her heart out. We need a new world. This happens again and again in our world. Think about a world where there's no sorrow, where there's no fighting. What a world. We need that today, don't we? And no pain. Some of you know what pain is like. Some of us have been told that we have terminal cancer and, man, it can be very painful. Some of us have been told that our life is coming to an end. There's going to be no more pain in that last empire. And finally, no more death. Haven't we stood over the graves of too many loved ones to say our goodbyes? And we make our pillows saturated with our tears. God says this last empire, there'll be no more death. It's going out. I like the way he finished. Daniel said to the king, "The great God has shown the king what shall come to pass in the future. The dream is certain. and the interpretation is sure. You can bet, King, this is going to happen. You know, if you were a betting person, if I was a betting person, I'd put $1 million on that it's going to happen. Why? Because Babylon was replaced, or the Medo-Persians conquered them. Then they were superseded by the Greeks, then the Romans, and then Western Europe. Four kingdoms and no more. It all happened. So if all that has happened, one after another, precisely, you can rest assured the next thing, the rock that strikes the image on the feet, will happen. So what should be our reaction, yours and mine? How should we respond to these things? Should we bite our fingernails in a corner, scared stiff or something? No. Notice what Jesus said. Now, when these things begin to take place, stand up, lift up your heads, because your deliverance is approaching. The last empire is about to begin. Let me tell you, my friend, there's no question about it. Jesus is soon going to take over. Notice what he said. When these things begin to take place, stand up, lift up your heads, your deliverance is coming, meaning the last empire is about to appear. There's that submarine sitting on the bottom of the ocean with that haunting question, is there any hope? The divers tapped a message on the outside hull of that submarine, and this was their message. Yes, there is hope, meaning we're going to get you out. You know, my friend, many people with that same haunting question for our world, is there any hope? These prophecies, this one that we've looked at today, and the one we looked at in the previous presentation, they shout to us, yes, there is hope. Soon the last empire will appear. What a great thing. Thank God that there is hope. We're not going to go out in some big bang. I trust that you've enjoyed this presentation, and that you make sure that you watch our next one. We're going to be looking at the global agenda, Patmos and the Apocalypse. Invite a friend to watch this series on 3ABN. But before we go, let me close with a word of thankfulness to God for showing us these things and giving us hope. Let's bow. Father, we want to thank you so much that the Bible knows or tells us what's going to happen, not so that we can be clever, but so that we can be ready. Thank God for these prophecies that help us to realize there is a God and he cares about it and he wants us to be part of his last empire. May we put our lives right now in the hands of this God who cares so much about us. We thank you in Jesus' name. Amen. We look forward to seeing you next time in our next program, The Global Agenda.
Production of 3ABN Australia Television.
So many lost and dying in this world today, have you heard their crying, or do you turn away? The harvest now is plenteous, but the laborers are few. God needs some willing vessels to be used. Here am I, thank you. Is it too late for caring? Does Jesus really save? Are we truly praying for the blind to find their way? Little children are falling into a burning hell. Will anyone heed the calling to go and tell?
The Hamilton family singing Behold the Lamb. And before that, you heard the Sacred Heritage Quartet sing Here I Am. Coming up next is Peace in the Midst of the Storm by Sweetwater Revival.
I run to you, my Jesus.
You give me peace in the midst of the storm. You give me peace in the midst of the storm.
You've been listening to a production of 3ABN Australia Radio.